All right, we're going to turn now to our first interview of the morning. I've got Shorty Dubs in the studio.
What up?
Is that actually what we're going to call you? I'll talk about that off the air.
Yeah, that'll be Dubs to you.
No. Dubs. Mr. Dubs.
Shorty Dubs. Mr. Dubs. You can call me Brad.
Brad? Okay, all right. Shorty Dubs. I'll be all right. Yeah, I guess you get both. I mean, during the weekend when people come in and they don't know you, they're going to call you Shorty Dubs, I guess.
They do.
Let's hit the first piece of important info is where is your exhibition going to be during the arts weekend?
Good question. I'm going to be down on Wallace Street at the old dairy factory.
Is that where you do your work?
58. I do. I have a little studio space in there where I've been kind of working away at this new collection for the last sort of year.
Okay.
I'm going to be set up down in the main room there with my friend Hayley Hamilton.
Okay. Mm. And since we're on the radio and no one can see, some of the people won't have seen your work at all. How do you describe it to people if you have to do it verbally?
I guess if you maybe know a little bit about art, Basquiat and a Banksy had a baby, you'd kind of end up with a Shorty Dubs.
Yeah, if you can reference Banksy, is it somewhere in that vicinity, I guess?
So I work a lot with that's easy for people. With stencils, it's kind of street art with stencils, but you know, with a lot of colour.
And this is your second arts weekend?
It's my second arts weekend.
So what was it like last time with a few hundred people probably coming by?
Yeah, it was cool. I was a little bit further out of town last year and didn't really know what to expect with it all. But no, I had a good time. Had a lot of visitors through and sold a bunch of work. So no, it was sick.
And how do people react? Like, what sort of questions do they ask you about when they see it?
Why does it cost that much? How long did you spend on that?
It looks easy.
Some people, the creative types come in and immediately want to talk about process and how things are done, and then analytical people come in and just immediately want to know how many hours you spent on every piece.
Okay.
Those are the two questions you get.
All right, okay. They're not asking about the inspiration behind it?
Some people do, yeah.
Yeah, what is the inspiration behind your work? Or is it probably not one thing?
But yeah, it's just all led by curiosity. Process and curiosity is probably what spawns most of the work. Some of them will have a really deep thread and a story that go through them, and some of them are just pure inspiration and
spur of the moment. Okay,
and come out the way they come out. It's kind of a bit of both.
And does anyone ever ask you if you were a tagger when you were young?
A little bit, yeah. There's definitely a lot of hip hop influence in the art. I was always a little bit more on the musical side of that culture, but I get asked that a bit, but was never a street bomber or a tagger.
Is that I'm actually wondering if that's an insulting question or whether the act of tagging is a kind of a thing we should take more seriously as a cultural activity.
Yeah. I don't know if we take it more seriously. We should all take it a bit more seriously. Get out and tag.
As in like, I don't mean like that. Like,
as an art form?
Yeah, like, because I think people see it as a rebellion, but then a lot of stuff starts from rebellion.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
I think a lot of it is probably just trying to be a voice and be seen and be heard.
That sounds like art, doesn't it?
It does, yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe there's a little bit of a pain, a little difference between maybe tagging and maybe bombing or doing larger format pieces.
Yeah. Because if you go down to the skate bowl, there's some awesome stuff on the skate bowl there. Like, you wouldn't call that an act of vandalism at all.
I think the tagging is probably a bit of a gateway drug to the broader art of hip-hop and graffiti.
I like that. I like that idea, yeah. So you were just telling me off there that you didn't start off being a visual artist. Mm. It was something quite different. Do you want to tell us about where this all started? Because obviously, I mean, did you do art at school? Was it even something that happened?
My first job was out of high school was I worked as a screen printer.
Yeah.
When I was going through music school. I went into music school down in Wellington when I left high school. Which was where so I was learning. I was doing learning screen printing as a trade, and then in my spare time out of class, I was learning to produce music and sample, make beats and write songs.
Yeah.
So that was kind of the interjection of how I saw the creative process.
Yeah.
Kind of music and color. So yeah, and then pretty early on, I got involved. With a musical project, a band called Rapture Ruckus, which became a big part of my path for a number of years.
Are they from around here or from?
We started in Wellington. It started in Wellington, but it's in New Zealand.
I've heard the name recently. I don't know why, but yeah.
So I did that for about 10 years before signing a record deal with a sub-label of EMI in America. And in 2010, a bunch of us moved out to America, and we were based in Nashville for 10 years. We were touring and doing music.
Is there a hip-hop scene in Nashville?
No, not really. It's a bit more of a pop hip hop scene. What we learned was so our booking agent was based there, and so part of our visa was we kind of had to be located there. And what we kind of learned was you can reach, I think it's something like 80% of the American population's a 10-hour drive from Nashville, which is why it's become a huge hub for.
There we go. There's some
musicians.
Insight. Yeah.
So yeah, although it's definitely the home of country, it's pretty broad. The people, you'd be surprised who you find based there. As part of that record deal, it was more of a licensing deal, in which we ended up taking on the role of the label, which was providing a lot of the creative. So, you know, funding music videos and album art and a lot of those things, which the Kiwis in us would just go mad DIY at every opportunity we could, which kind of led to, you know, me learning, you know, photography and filming and graphic design, which I'd always loved. Which to me became as much of a, you know, part of the process as the songwriting.
Yeah.
I loved it just as much and would invest probably more time because it would just be constantly spawning my curiosity into new creative fields.
Was it the same thing that was inspiring the music or that was inspiring the art that went with it?
Mm.
Did it kind of, well, I mean, did the art, the art must have related to the music, so
Yeah, it's a bit of both. Like it's just chasing curiosity in the learning process, which is it's almost like those times of when you're learning a new craft are the most inspiring times, because like, oh, you learn a new technique, which leads to like, oh, I've got a new idea of how I could use that. Just the same with painting. I kind of see them through the same filter of how you structure songs and make records is kind of the way I see the painting process too, of making demos and drafting ideas and then going through production and then
and edit.
Varnishing is mastering. Like, I just think of it like how you'd make a record.
Okay. Oh, that's really interesting. So you're doing that. You're doing like everything in Nashville at one point.
I'm not all doing it myself, but yeah, we've got a team and we're involved in a lot of that process. So we're touring, putting out music, and we did okay. We did good enough to support ourselves. For 10 years out there in our families, there's about 9 of us at one stage. We owned a tour bus and we're doing about 100 dates a year. And around 2018, it just felt like it was time for a bit of a change. Felt like things had plateaued a bit, and I'd been getting a lot of voices sort of outside sort of saying, oh, maybe it's time to pivot and do something a little bit different. So I started a new side project called Shorty Dubs, which was going to be a music project to just try to do something a little bit different.
Yeah. Like a bit kind of solo?
A bit more of a solo thing
that
I could kind of do myself. So I started doing that and I released a couple songs. And again, back to like, because it was a new thing, I didn't have any shows or really anything to do with it. I set up the Instagram account and I just really didn't have anything to share. I didn't like taking selfies of myself. So I started making a digital collage where I was just kind of on the tablet collaging and sort of making little art pieces.
Yeah. Presumably with the music.
There'd be music involved behind it. And then I'd make those collages. I don't even remember, there was a period on Instagram where, you know, you'd make a grid of like, you'd post 9 images and then when you go into the gallery, they'd all look like one.
Yeah, it made sense. Yeah.
And And that really like started to take off a lot bigger than the music.
Right.
Spawning a lot of interest through the art that I was putting on there, which led me to lean more and more into art, and then taking that, and then I was like, man, if I can just do this all digitally, like, why can't I just pick up a paintbrush and try that? I thought art was, painting was something for someone else.
Right, that was something, yes, other people did that.
Yeah, really clever people.
That, right, okay. So that was sort of up there somewhere, yeah. out of your reach,
yeah.
maybe what you thought.
So I'd started dabbling, and then it wasn't until we moved to Rags in 2019, and then when the pandemic hit, I really like, and we were sort of at home, was when I really leaned into painting. And it started with painting trees with a palette knife. And then one day I was like, I can't remember what it was that spawned the idea of cutting a stencil, but I was like, that's all right. We built my kids a skate ramp, and they really wanted to put some like a stencil of a certain spray paint image of their favorite Marvel character.
Oh yeah.
So I was like, how do you make a stencil? So I started looking into that and cutting. And the moment I kind of got the blade and the cardboard and the image and started cutting it, I was like, and sprayed it. I was like, I love this.
Right.
I love this. And the last sort of 5 years plus, I've just been leaning in hard into stenciling and seeing how far I can take that. It's gone pretty from a little hand cutting with a razor through vinyl plotters to lasers to see how detailed and I can make it.
And it's not just stenciling. Like, I'm looking at your Instagram now, and I can see your hand with, I don't know if that's chalk or
pastels.
Yep. And then there's paint happening,
yep.
and spray paint as well.
Yep.
Yeah. And you don't, I mean, do you, the way you've come at it, like, you, no one's given you a set of rules or anything.
Yeah.
And so you're making up your style as you go along.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't want to make that sound cheap. That's not what I mean. It's like, there's something about not having a set of rules.
Yeah.
That can be really helpful, I think.
Absolutely. Yeah. The cool thing with, I think where I got to with music was, you get in your head so much about trying to make what you think is going to work for other people.
Mm.
And I never had, with art, it was, with painting, it's always been like, oh, what do I want to see? Like, I only make things that I like and what I want to see.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's as simple as that. And I find, like, whenever I do that, for whatever reason, it seems to connect with more people, because no one knows what other people really want. Like,
true. Yeah.
I can't guess what people were going to like. I've learned that from the art shows that I've done, where the things that I like, oh, people are going to like that one. It's not always the case. And the thing that maybe I didn't like as much as the one might be the first piece to sell. So.
And I've been looking at Instagram on the same computer that I play music for the radio, so I have had the sound off.
Yeah.
But is it Shorty Dubs music that part of that now?
No.
So the music side of Shorty Dubs is just...
I've parked it, yeah.
You parked it?
It's pretty parked. So I like to share music on there that is basically the kind of music I'll be listening to while I'm painting.
Okay, yeah, yeah. Oh, that's excellent.
Yeah.
So... one of the TikToks I noticed had 3.7 million views, and I'm presuming, based on what you just said, you don't, not totally sure why that one in particular went viral, but
yeah, I had a little viral moment.
Was that cool? Was that fun when that happens?
Yeah, it was cool. Yeah, it was very surprising. I was on a surfing mission that day on a boat, and we'd hopped on the boat, and I think my video had. Posted my video, then before we got on the boat, it was, you know, it might have had 1,500 views, and then I think when we got to where we were going and we were getting in our suits, I had another look, and I was like, oh, it's had like 15,000 views, and then we surfed, and I got out of the water, and I was like, oh, it's had 150,000, then by the time we got back, it had 1 million, and then it...
So it was like those tenfold increases.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was pretty crazy. But yeah, it was a pretty cool moment, and...
What does that translate into when something like that happens? Because there's lots of things go viral all the time, and there's a whole world full of stuff going viral now.
It's probably not as much as you might think.
I mean, is there money when it does that? TikTok's famous for not actually.
Well, if there is, I didn't get any of it.
Yeah, I've heard people go, they go big on TikTok and then they're like, okay, I've got to transition to YouTube so I can actually make a living out of this. If they're making videos, yeah.
It is probably shocking to me how, I guess, many people have, you know, just through social media, like seen the works they like and followed and, you know, reach out in the DMs and it ends up to purchasing pieces and sending them, you know.
So that's happening?
Yeah, that's happening.
Yeah. So that's people from overseas,
and,
I presume.
Yep, people from overseas and here in New Zealand.
So have you been able to quit the day job then?
I still got my toe in two pools there.
Okay.
So yeah, I do some marketing and creative directing work as well.
Okay.
To help pay the bills and the painting is something I really like to keep as a side hustle, and I don't really have a huge desire to want to make that the breadwinner for the family if I can avoid it.
Yeah.
And just because, like I said, it's when you're just doing it for yourself, it's very hard to I think it would have to be on a pretty high level of success before I was confident to.
Yeah you don't want to get into that situation where you're making it for other people.
I think that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, it sounds like you've got it reasonably well sorted at the moment then.
Yeah. So I kind of split my time between kind of these kind of works, which are the Shorty Dubs project, which is kind of all inspiration and curiosity, and I can go in any direction I want at any time with no worries about crashing the bus. And then I can kind of use those same sort of skills to help other people with other projects.
So what sort of, like you say you're putting like other people's music on now on the reels and the TikToks. Mm. Like who are you listening to? Or are you out there digging around finding stuff?
I listen to a lot of 90s rap.
Okay.
but it's pretty broad. It's pretty broad. I have like, sometimes I'll be like just checking out Instagram and then I see like little trends going on with songs.
Yeah.
And then I just have a go with some song that I don't, you know what I mean? And then it doesn't work and then I feel like an idiot.
Well, though, if it doesn't work, no, who knows, right?
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So I try not to pay too close attention to the trends.
Yeah. Let me just go. Oh, yeah, I was just wondering, is there a particular type of person who buys your work? Because we're talking, like it gets put in the urban street art kind of category. So, well, probably if someone categorizes it, I could see it going like that.
Yeah, but the funny thing is that the most people buying them are upper class white women.
Right, okay.
buy all the art.
Yeah.
I had that realization a few months ago when I was like, man, I think nearly every painting I've ever sold was to a woman. And even though it's a very masculine sort of style of art.
Okay, well, maybe that's why, I guess.
Maybe. But, there you go.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Intriguing.
A lot of women.
Yeah. Mm. Obviously, you've got to be someone with a bit of money anyway to be buying art, so I guess that kind of self-selects that side of things. But the fact that it's women, interesting.
Yep.
Are there other artists? Is anyone else in Raglan doing art like yours? Or do we need to go out of town to find more this kind of work?
Yeah, I mean, we've got Theo's doing amazing muraling.
Is he part of the... There's so many, I can't hold them all in my head, like everyone who's...
Yeah, Theo, it's probably doesn't look the same, but I feel like... Sam Mather's art has been big and pretty inspirational. I'd be pretty sure he's probably drawing from a similar pool of that era of art that's inspired me.
Yeah.
Looking at his work.
Hey.
Marie's in the studio early.
What up, Marie?
Hi. We're going to be talking to Marie later. And are there artists who are an inspiration to you? Like, I'm kind of asking that because you kind of said it came from you just trying some stuff and going, oh, this is cool, I'm going to keep doing it. But are there other artists now who inspire you to do, you incorporate their stuff into your work now?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many now. Like, especially with, you know, with social media, Instagram, it feels like every day I'm finding something that's blowing my mind and inspiring me. I still draw a lot from that 80s era of, you know, New York street artists that kind of pivoted into fine art.
Yeah.
You know, like the Basquiat's and the Keith Haring's and the Andy Warhol's. So I really love flicking through art books and sort of drawing inspiration there. But yeah, man, it's just like a world of amazing art out there.
Can it get a little bit overwhelming if you get lost in that online? Like,
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yep.
And it, everything is sped up. I'm just wondering about that because I think with a piece of art, you're supposed to spend a bit of time with it as the viewer.
Yeah.
But when it's on social media, you're like flick, 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 flick.
Yeah.
And I'm not quite sure what that does for art.
Yeah. I think that's why when it comes to the social media, I prefer to share snippets of the process more so than sort of making the final presentation of here's the piece in 180 pixels screen or whatever it is.
Yeah, yeah, because that is going to be pretty quick. So, so folks, you should check out Shorty Dubs with an S at the end, not a Z, which I think a lot of people are going to presume. because, the process is there, and that's, I think, it's always telling a story, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, process, like the treasure is always in the process for the artist. It's like almost when it's finished, it's a nice feeling to know that it's finished, but it's also kind of sad and it's like, right, I'm going to get straight on to the next thing.
Right,
the,
okay.
The process is the part, you know.
Keep the addiction going.
Yeah.
Is the making the reel as important as the art itself? Like, do you do one for every piece?
Oh, sorry, making the video, like the videos?
Yeah, making the video, yeah.
I try not to think too much about it as I'm doing it because it does ruin a little bit having to think about...
If you're mentally planning the shots while you're doing the art, that's two things at once.
So generally if I'm about to do something that might be a part of interest in the process, I have, a tripod sitting by and I just throw the phone on it, record a clip, and then I'll just sort of shoot all those into a folder. And then somewhere down the line when that piece is finished, I'll have a bunch of clips that I can then edit into something. But
okay.
I don't really think too much about it as I'm doing it because a lot of them take weeks from start to finish.
Do they?
They do. I just wear the same clothes a lot of the time.
That's what's misleading me.
Yeah.
Why? So I guess there's many layers, aren't there? And so
That's right.
For starters, they've all got to dry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially in winter, like. Yeah, this is my biggest problem is that I will put a layer down and then I'm impatient and then I'll do another layer, stencil down and then peel up the previous layer when I pull the stencil and then I got a sandpaper's got to come out.
Oh, no.
But
that could be a little bit depressing.
Yeah. Bad language.
Bad language occurs. So your workspace, you're in the old dairy factory, so it's not the warmest building, I imagine.
No, it's not the warmest. It's a bit drafty. But it's pretty exciting that it's going to be getting a pretty big facelift soon.
Is it?
What's
the story there?
It's in the process of a pretty big renovation, which is pretty cool. So there's going to be a few more artists sort of setting up there and maybe a sort of few professionals renting some spaces. So I guess over the next year, I hope it become a bit more of a spot, a little bit more retail.
That's cool. It's an interesting thing to do with an old building like that.
Yeah.
Because you see those old dairy factories all around the country.
Yeah.
Often sitting in a field somewhere, nothing going on, but that one.
And it's so cool too. And it feels like it's got so much history and like it's over 100 years old.
Isn't it interesting how converting that into that space, you get a better space than a purpose-designed one?
Yeah.
You know, where you can do anything.
Yeah.
Somehow you can't do it as well as if you've got a space like that and you're converting it.
Yeah. Yeah. Something cool about stepping into spaces of history. I really like working down there. So we've got Sarah Bing's down there, we've got Monster Company and Rivet. And there might be a couple other spots where we get a couple more artists down there. So we're kind of trying to really create a little hub in town here with a bunch of artists working together.
That's good for Arts Weekend too. Like people know they're going to see a lot of, and quite a wide variety of artists too, different media, different styles.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Do you have a no, I don't want to say a sales pitch. Do you have anything you want people to know about? They're going to come and check you guys out this weekend or check your workout?
No, I would just love to see you and have a chat, and you know, come expecting to have a yarn, crack a pals, and we'll be there. I think it's from maybe like 10 till 5. I'll be there all day.
Saturday,
Sunday, Monday. Come on down.
Okay. And actually, what's the number on the street? Do you know
it's
the street?
It's 58.
58.
58 Wallace Street.
I mean, it's a pretty obvious building. Old dairy factory. There's nothing else like it on the street, but it might help some people.
Yeah, there'll be a lot of those little Arts Weekend flags flying, I'd say.
Yeah, actually, yeah, that's the other way to do it. Just drive around. People will be doing that, I'm sure. I'll just go for a drive and see what we find. Let's
find some flags.
Yeah.
So I've been working on, last year I really only had sort of larger originals, paintings for sale, which I also have a big collection of originals this year, but I've also been working on a few smaller more accessible pieces, some sort of little handmade prints and a few other bits, which are a little bit going to be first in, first served, but I'm pretty excited about those as well.
Okay, that sounds really cool. Folks, we've been talking to Shorty Dubs, or Brad, as his mum called him, and thanks for coming in, man. It's really interesting to have a chat and see what you're all about.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Later.